Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily and sometimes more than daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth, and we are live in the House of Commons after a second dramatic vote this week. After Theresa May's Brexit deal was voted down last night, MPs today were supposed to be given a free vote on where they wanted to try and take no deal off the table as an option. However, things didn't go exactly to plan. A backbench amendment calling for the government to rule out no deal in more explicit terms passed by four votes. At that point, the government then changed its whipping procedure, telling MPs not to vote for the overall motion. James, what exactly happened?
That is a very good question, and one that I suspect several people in government are asking themselves tonight. So Caroline Spelman put down an amendment last night because the government's motion seemed to be just ruling out no deal on March 29th, not no deal forever. Then during the day, Caroline Spelman said she wouldn't move the amendment. But because she had put the amendment down with other people, those other people could move the amendment. So Yvette Cooper moves the amendment, which says that the House would not support no deal at any time, any place. That vote passed by four votes. Then what happened is the government's motion as amended was put to the House, so including the Spelman amendment. At which point the government said, we're going to whip against this because we wanted to take no deal off the table on the 29th of March. We didn't want to take it off the table for good. At which point, essentially, all hell broke loose. You had at least four members of the cabinet abstain on the motion because they didn't want to vote against and get sacked, but they also wanted to indicate that they didn't support keeping no deal on the table. You had Sarah Newton, one minister, resign in the division lobbies. And the government was then defeated by a quite significant margin. So the House of Commons has voted to not to support leaving without a deal in any circumstances at any time. Now, this doesn't change the law, but it does send a clear message that the House of Commons isn't going to support this. At the same, straight after that vote, Theresa May announced an extension vote tomorrow, so a vote on extending Article 50. It comes with two palms. One basically says to MPs, if you pass my deal in the next 7 days, I will go to the European Council and just negotiate a short technical extension to get the legislation through. If you don't, we will have to have a longer extension and we will have to participate in the European elections. It is quite clear that we're going to have a third go at getting Theresa May's vote through by this time next week. Indeed, I expect in a week's time, we might be standing out here in
doing
the cold, doing it again.
Well, that's great. Now, before we get on to what that means with the Article 50 possible extension and looking to the vote tomorrow, I think it's important to look at one of the other amendments. So there was an amendment that was put forward by Eurosceptics today, and it was based on the Malthouse Compromise, which is the European Research Group's favoured option when it comes to getting some form of Brexit deal or managed no deal. And this amendment was basically suggesting, or the aim was to show that there was support in the House of Commons for a form of managed no deal if a deal couldn't be agreed. That didn't go exactly to plan, did it?
No, I think it got 164 votes. If you look at it, roughly just under half the Conservative Parliamentary Party voted for it. What I think is interesting is that five cabinet ministers, by my count, backed it. Jeremy Hunt, Sajid Javid, Gavin Williamson, Andrew Leadsom and Penny Morden.
And you could say some of those names that you just mentioned do have something in common, and it's not just perhaps how some of them voted in the Brexit referendum. Some of them are seen to have leadership ambitions.
I think a lot of people will see the vote like that. I think those close to them would argue that this is a thing that has some potential to unite the Tory party, which appears to be in danger of splitting asunder. I think the problem now, and again, you get into all of these problems of the whole argument about Brexit, which is the EU have repeatedly said we won't do Malthouse, but lots of people, including people in the cabinet, think we've never really threatened to walk away from the table and said, but here's Malthouse if you're interested. And so again, this all comes back to this problem. And I think you see this in the vote tonight on no deal, which is if you were going to negotiate in the ideal way with the European Union, you would have a governing party with a whopping great majority that could basically say, we can do this, we can do that. We can be confident that we can carry the House of Commons for whatever we want to do. And that will give you the strongest negotiating position. Instead, we have a hung parliament with an extremely weak prime minister, a prime minister who can't even really think about sacking cabinet ministers who abstain on free-line whips. And therefore, the negotiations are not going very well.
Do you think this is a night which has actually revealed the reality of the situation in the House of Commons? Because when you look at what lots of Brexiters have wanted, and you touched on that with things like the Malthouse Compromise, there has long been a view that Theresa May hasn't asked for the right things, that she hasn't managed to threaten no deal as a reliable or even real risk that the UK might do it. But if you look at those votes tonight, we had the Eurosceptics try and win support for their plan as an idea. It got about the support of half the Conservative Party, far short of getting close to a House of Commons majority. Meanwhile, Theresa May's no deal motion was deemed to be not strong enough. We saw a majority of MPs go for an even stronger version of no deal. So is this in some case vindicating Number 10's strategy?
I think vindicating Number 10's strategy would be too kind. I think it's hard to think there is some grand plan behind recent developments. I do think tonight's developments, I mean, they have a better chance in meaningful vote three, in that essentially it has become clear that with this House of Commons, if Theresa May's deal does not pass, Brexit is only going to get softer. And I think, frankly, that's been obvious for quite a while. I think the question now is how many Brexiteers would prefer, in the phrase that some of them like to use, you know, to see everything done in the daylight. They want it all done in the open. They want it obvious the ways in which Brexit has been betrayed. Or how many of them think actually leaving the European Union is really important, so let's vote for Theresa May's deal despite its imperfections because it gets us out of the EU.
And that brings us back to a man we discussed on the podcast last night, Jacob Rees-Mogg. And you made the point, James, that In his reasons for voting down the deal on Meaningful Vote 2, MV2, he seemed to give himself a ladder to climb down, Jacob's ladder. He made the point that at the moment he didn't want to support this deal, it was flawed. But if Brexit looked like it was genuinely in peril and not a phantom threat, then it might change and he and other ERG members could back it. Do you think this is a point people like Jacob Rees-Mogg look at the situation and say Brexit is in peril?
I think there are signs that is beginning to happen. I was struck today how different the mood was. After Theresa May's lost the first meaningful vote by 230 votes, but those people who voted against it weren't in any way apologetic.
I think they had a party, didn't they?
Yeah, indeed. This vote, this morning, I was struck by the fact that several people said to me, well, look, the Cox legal advice made things impossible for us, or we can't vote for it if the DUP can't support it. And I think there are signs today that the government is making some progress with the DUP. And I think tonight's events, if you can combine that with enough progress with the DUP for them to say that they will back the deal, and possibly also an assurance from Theresa May that a new Prime Minister will be conducting phase two of the negotiations, then I think that Meaningful Vote 3 might have a much better chance than Meaningful Vote 2 did. But the thing to remember is she's still 149 votes behind. And this is the point that you were making rightly, repeatedly in the run-up to the vote. If she had lost by a relatively small margin, it would be easier to see how Meaningful Vote 3 could get over the line. The problem is she basically has to flip 75 MPs in a week, and that's not easy.
Now, when it comes to the time between now and what we expect to be Meaningful Vote 3, can you just run us through what the hurdles Theresa May has to really get over here? Because we have a vote tomorrow, and what will be the choice that is presented to MPs?
So the choice tomorrow is essentially extension or not extension, and then two types of extension. One is this technical extension to ratify her deal, essentially, and the other is a much longer extension with the UK participating in the European Parliament elections.
And just to end this podcast, sitting in the press gallery tonight, looking at those votes and looking at the Conservative Party as they tried to work out what on earth was going on, with which lobby they were supposed to be in, which lobby they wanted to be in, didn't seem in a particularly good place, in that things at points seem quite venomous between different MPs. How do you think the Conservative Party brings itself back together after this?
I think as we were talking about earlier, Katie, one of the big questions is, as you were writing in The Guardian, you know, can you put the Tory party back together again after this? Or is this forcing so many divisions to the fore that will become impossible. And then I think the other question becomes, there's a lot of odd stuff going on. Free votes, ministers abstaining on 3-9 whips and not being sacked. Is this going to become the new normal? Or can Theresa May's successor kind of return to the status quo ante? And I mean, that's kind of a big question about the nature of a Tory party and whether it is going to have to operate as a looser kind of coalition, or whether it can return to being a more disciplined party again.
Thanks, James. And we'll be back tomorrow with all the latest twists in this continuing tale. Do join us then. And if you like this podcast, why not subscribe? Or perhaps if you really like it, you could leave us a review. Just go to the iTunes store.